Shertina. Shertina? Shertina. Shertina from Tri-County.
That I remain clean, but I was able to get up this morning and share this topic. When I got that topic from John C., who's on the program committee from Central Maryland, I started thinking about my story. And when I came into Narcotics Anonymous, they said, you know, our program is based on the concept that an addict, any addict, can stop using, lose the desire to use, find a new way of life. And I said, you know, I'm not that. The first substance I picked up was alcohol. As a teenager, I used Wild Irish Rose, pink champagne. Pink champagne to fit in with the older kids around the block because I needed to fit in. I needed to feel, you know, like I was like them because my mother was an addict. My mother started using powder when I was 19 years old, when I was 9 years old, not 19, when I was 9 years old. And I started to feel like I was different than everybody else. Nobody else's mother was an addict. My mother stayed out for weeks at a time. I didn't want anybody to know that my mother wasn't in the house. And so everybody else was drinking, so I wanted to be like them. I wanted to fit in. My mother ended her career smoking crack. So right then and there, I said, you know, as long as I never use those substances, I'll be all right. I started to hate cocaine right then and there. So right then and there, I made a declaration. As long as I never picked up those substances, I would be okay. But right then and there, I started feeling abandonment, guilt, shame, anger, and depression. So I stayed on this track with the substance of alcohol, and I said, that's going to be it. I'm not going to pick up anything else. I had declared that alcohol was not a drug, and that would be the only thing that I used. However, as I got older, I got introduced to marijuana. Even though that small voice said, it's a drug. Don't go past this. You said you would never pick up anything else. Still, something bigger said, you need to fit in. You don't love yourself. You need something to make you feel better about yourself. That's what everybody else is doing. It's going to make you feel better. It's going to make you fit in. You're going to have more friends. So go ahead. It's all right. It's not coke. So I changed. So now alcohol wasn't the last thing I used. I stepped up the game. So I stepped up the game, and, you know, I'm fitting in. I'm in the in crowd. I'm in high school. And I got a bunch of friends now. So I moved on, left home when I was 19 years old. I started working for the government and started hanging out with what I call the pretty people of Washington, D.C. I had a job. I was going to school part-time. I was hanging out with the Mercedes-Benz drivers, the BMW drivers, the doctors and the lawyers, and I wanted to fit in. And in the clubs, in the bathroom, the females were snorting coke. At the parties, in the bedroom, they were snorting coke. They would close the door, and I felt left out. I'm like, what they doing in the bathroom? What they doing in the bedroom? So I wanted to fit in. Yet again, I felt like I was being left out of something. The voice said you weren't moving no past this. You wasn't going no further. Remember, you said your mother did coke. Remember how that made you feel as a little girl when you would be looking out the window saying, when is my mother coming home? With your nose pressed up against the glass. And when she would come home and stay for a couple days after she went out on that run, you say, please let this be the last one. Please let her stay home and be done. But you know it wasn't never the last one because she'd keep going back out. But that feeling of needing to be accepted by my peers, money, property, and prestige, because these people had money. They had prestige. I ended up going into the bathroom stall of the club. I ended up going into the bedroom, pulling out the mirror. And before I knew it, I got caught up in something I couldn't get out of. And before I knew it, I ended up marrying somebody, and because his last name was his last name, and his family had status in the District of Columbia, I married an addict. And we co-signed each other's using. And we had enough money that I thought that it was okay. The mortgage was paid. I had two houses. We had three cars. And, you know, we was going to every function. So I thought it was okay. It's all right. You know, when I was growing up, the lights was getting turned off. Because my father was trying to take care of two daughters in a household that needed two incomes, but it only had one. He was working 16-hour days, and I was there left taking care of my sister. So I thought that it was okay. But before I knew it, I couldn't stop. I kept saying, okay, I'm going to stop. I'm going to just use tonight, and then I could put this down. Because I saw the cycle coming. But the nights kept rolling. That night was never the last night. So what ended up happening was I got pregnant. And I carried this baby to 27 weeks gestation. And I thought that that feeling of abandonment that I felt with my mother, that loss that a child feels when their mother's not there to raise them, that feeling of isolation and abandonment and shame, the guilt and the pain that I felt as a child, was the only pain that I would ever feel, because I had that hole in me that a child has when their mother is absent. I thought I would never feel anything like that ever again. And me and my sister had that same pain. We would always talk about it until I lost my first child. My child was stillborn. The pain that I felt when I delivered a dead child was similar to that pain that I felt growing up without my mother. And I was like, God, how could you let me go through this twice in one lifetime, experience a similar loss as when I felt like I lost my mother when I was 9 years old? So it wasn't the last time I felt that loss. So I'm in such a state of grief, and I'm looking back, and I'm in the present, and I'm like, you know, comparing the two loss. And the hospital's doing an autopsy on the baby, trying to figure out what happened. And then I'm having guilt because, of course, in the beginning of the first trimester, I used. And so, of course, now that the baby's dead, I'm using. So I come home from the crematory. I have my baby cremated. And I'm like, okay, I can't deal with no more. This has to be it. You know, that's enough loss. That's enough feelings of abandonment for one lifetime. I get a call from my cousin in Brooklyn, originally from New York. And she says, your grandmother has had an accident. She's collapsed in New York, and she's on the floor in the kitchen. She was on the floor in the kitchen, and a blood vessel is seeping in her brain, and she's getting ready to die. Now, I lived with my grandmother up until I was 7 years old. I slept in a bed with my grandmother in the early childhood stages of my life. You talk about another loss. Another feeling like, okay, wait a minute, hold up. I'm already grieving. I'm already feeling like somebody has torn something away from me. I thought that could be the last thing that I could ever feel that could be so detrimental to. On the heels of that, I'm feeling this. I ain't know whether to shit, piss, go outside, stand, walk the dog, and I ain't even have a dog. So, needless to say, I used. But the pain was so great, I was just in this fog. I had spun into this cycle of deep, deep depression, and the pain was so deep, unbearable, like I had never, ever experienced in my life. I thought growing up without a mother was hard, and then on the heels of that, of losing my baby was hard, and then not even being able to fully grieve that, having my grandmother die and having to bury her, not even really being able to deal with any of that. I said, you know, powder ain't doing it. It's not doing it. I know I said I wouldn't go past that. It wasn't doing it anymore. I crossed over the line. I crossed over the line, and I had to smoke. I felt like I had to. And when I got to that point, I didn't know where it started. I didn't know where it stopped. I didn't know where the middle was. All I know was I was doing it. And I didn't know how to stop. I didn't know how to stop. And I know that qualified me to get here. And the only intervention that I could say helped me to get here was the Maryland Department of Corrections. you know. They helped me to say, the only way it's going to be your last one is if we step in to help you make it be your last one. And so I ended up going to a treatment facility, and the therapeutic value of one addict helping another stepped in. I walked into that treatment facility, and I had talked to my mother. By then, my mother had stopped using, and I talked to her on the phone as I was riding there. And I said, what if this don't work? I had been in and out of facilities. I had been in and out of jail. I had tried to kill myself 3 times because I couldn't stop. I just wanted, every time I tried to stop, I wanted to be the last one, and it wouldn't. I kept fooling myself that it would be. I'd get like 10 days, and then I'd be right back into the cycle. So she said, take God with you. So I walked into the treatment facility, and another addict met me in the hallway, and I was crying. And she reached out her arms for me, and she said, just for today. And I said, what? She said, just for today. Just don't use today. And I said, wait a minute, hold up. Just for today? She said, that's it, just for today. And nobody had ever told me that before. I always thought I had to, like, not use until my mother died, not use until my father died, not use, you know, for the rest of my life. You know, I kept thinking in them big blocks, and I just couldn't make it. It wasn't working. She said, just don't use today. And it was like this light came on over our heads while she was hugging me. And I was like, damn. That's what I was missing all this time. Man, I could have got stopped getting locked up a long time ago if that was the case. And then I started going to meetings, and I started hearing people sharing about the spiritual awakening that will happen. And I said, damn, that's what they're talking about. That's the spiritual awakening. So I said, okay, I got this spiritual awakening thing that they're talking about. But I thought that that was the only spiritual awakening I was going to have. And it wasn't. And if I would have thought that that was the only spiritual awakening I was going to have, I would have cut myself short. About 45, 60 days into it, I started sitting in the rooms and crying my ass off. Just sitting in there, listening to people share. And I would just cry. I started identifying with what people were saying, especially the women. You know, I started hearing what they were saying about their kids, because by now I had a son. And hearing what they were saying about their marriages and their relationships with their mother, and I was just sitting in there, and I would just be crying, and I did not understand what was going on. And so I went to an experienced member, and I said, please explain to me what's going on. And she said, baby, you feeling? And I said, what? She said, you're feeling. Feel, deal, heal. What? She said, you suffer from a feelings disease. I said, I smoked crack. Well, what is you talking about? She said, baby, you in pain? I said, yes. I started feeling self-pity, guilt, shame, depression. You name it, I can run down a list. She said, if you want to get out of that pain, find you a sponsor and do some step work. So I found me a sponsor. And I started doing some step work within the first year. And I learned a lot about myself. I can tell you that. I learned a lot about myself. It helped me to see exactly what was going on, because I didn't understand that. I thought that just for today, that's all the hell I had to worry about. But I realized that that was only the first spiritual awakening that I had. I had another one. I had to recognize that there was this box, and I was stuffing all this stuff into the box. The drugs was just numbing down that box. So I realized that it was stages, and I was going to keep having spiritual awakenings, which is what somebody told me, which was going to happen to me. And I said, oh. So, you know, through the process, I realized that when I did that first fourth step, I did it to the best of my ability at that time, because I was in the first year. I was just in so much pain at that time. I had to do something, because I had spent so much, you know, from then when I got clean, I had experienced so much pain. I had to do something. I had to do something where I was going to use. And, you know, I was as searching as I could possibly be at that point. I was as fearless as I could possibly be at that point. But when I did that first fourth step, I would have told you that was the only fourth step I needed to do. I thought that it was going to be like this get out of jail free pass. like this get out of the crack house free pass, you never have to go back again. And it wasn't true, because what ended up happening was, because I was only half honest with my sponsor, I only told her what I wanted to tell her, I only wrote what I wanted to write down, only half of the resentments, I only told half of the story, I only got half of the benefit. So therefore, I continued to act out in many different areas. What I now know is, you know, I only skimmed the surface with some sexual stuff, so I continued to act out in those areas. You know, I went to prison. I told you that, okay? Check fraud is a lot of the reasons why I went. And so because I was only honest to a certain level with my sponsor, I didn't get any relief in that area. Greed still showed up even with clean time. And I didn't understand how you could be clean and live dirty, and I heard people say that. And I didn't understand what that meant. But if you do not put the information down in the fourth step, Shatina, you're not going to get relief from that stuff, Shatina, because you will go back to prison, Shatina. And I had 22 years hanging over my head. I wasn't off parole when I got here. I came in on parole, and I still had to do 5 years probation. And what I had to realize was that those character defects still was causing me some pain. And I really think that when that character defect showed up and I realized that my number 916-932 could show back up in my life real, I decided that it was time to do another fourth step. And then it was just some other things that the lie I told myself about that fourth step only being one time. That was a lie. That it wasn't the only time. You know, and then it was just some other issues, you know, just for me, that I had to realize that my relationships, even with people, that the freedom that doing another fifth step was going to allow me to build better relationships with human beings. Because the first time I did it, I realized that I really wasn't able to connect with other individuals like I was. You know, people give hugs and in Narcotics Anonymous. I was only really able to give half of a hug. Because the first fifth step, remember, I told you, I was only telling half the truth. So when I did another fourth step, I was able to connect with a human being better in the fifth step. And then when I did another six and seven, I was able to get more humble and become more willing. And, you know, going, and I didn't even realize that because I thought I was really being willing. But when I now look back, I recognize that you can always become more willing. Become more humble. And that list that I did, I only put a certain number of people that I was really ready to deal with. So it wasn't the last list. Now I got a list of some people who I'm really ready to get free with and build more loving and caring relationships with. You know, the relationship I have with my sister now is more loving and more caring than it was before. You know, I thought that I was only going to have a certain level of freedom. But the level of freedom that I have now is much, much deeper. And, you know, I'm also not even just closing the box on myself, because now I know that they say, what is it? What's the thing?
Oh, it was in the last one?
No. Mm-hmm. One promise, many gifts. Mm-hmm. So if you say, you know, this is it, there is no more, you'll be cutting yourself short. You know, I just want to tell y'all, if you're new, give yourself a chance. You know, there are so many gifts to be had, and this is not the last one. With that, I'm going to keep coming.
The next speaker we'll have is Joe from Washington, D.C.
Hi, I'm Joe. I'm an addict.
Hi, Joe.
The topic, it wasn't the last one.
Yes.
In the beginning, when I first started getting high at the age of 15, it gave me a whole new freedom. Mm. It made me a person that I thought I always wanted to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was this strong individual that nothing couldn't touch me, nothing couldn't hurt me, and nothing couldn't harm me. Also, it made me didn't feel the feelings that I was supposed to have been feeling when I was told about how raggedy my behavior, my attitude was toward people, and how I treated myself. Especially, I didn't care about me, so I didn't care about anybody else around me. So long as I was getting high, long as I had the money, I had it was my way, the only way. I didn't care what nobody else thought or how they felt. And I treated anybody like dirt who was around me. Long as I got you high, you had to learn how to accept that. But then when the feelings came back down towards me, I couldn't handle it. So I had to run and go get high. I had to go get some coke, get some reefer, boat, acid, on up to heroin and crack cocaine, order to make me not feel what I had to feel. Also, I really didn't want to face me because the mess I was making of my life, because I always was starting in the right direction. But I had to take a detour and make a left turn for me because I had to be grown because I thought I knew it all. Couldn't nobody tell me anything. So I did what I wanted to do, and I got what I wanted. A whole lot of pain and misery. And also, I kept me in denial for a long time because I would not refuse and ask anybody for some help or let anybody know how hurting I was because of the shame and guilt, because I could help anybody else. But when this time came to me to ask for some help, I wouldn't do it because everybody thought I was all right. But I was hurting like everybody else, you know. I had to take a look at the fact that towards the end of my bottom, everything fell out. The family went, the job went, and I didn't even know that I had went because I was too busy chasing that first feeling from that first high. Like we say, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. I was continuing on that vicious cycle, trying to get it right there like that first time, one more time, to make me feel good about me. Also, make me feel good to show my buddies that I can handle it. I was a soldier. But deep down inside, I knew I was a weakling. All I had to do was just get high or let somebody tell me the truth about me, how I was acting. Then I'll crawl and want to run, go hide one more time. Because I didn't want to face the truth about me. Until I surrendered in August of 1990. The drugs did what it was supposed to be, beat me down into submission, along with everything from crack, smoking woodies, and everything else. It beat me down into submission. Like I was talking about, I hit that bottom where the family went, the relationship went, most of all, I went, and I had a family member who didn't understand that I had a problem. Because people told me I had a problem a long time ago, but I didn't want to listen. I told myself, I'm all right. Each time I overdid it, and I got a little sick. See, it wasn't the last one. Because I can tell myself I'm going to stop. But the disease was calling, so I had to go get me one right then and there. See, I changed my mind within 5 minutes. Because I did not know what to do with me, and I thought the only way I could live if I was to continue. He was smoking, drinking, shooting, or whatever. Because that would told me I can get me together and I can handle life. Until in August of 90, I took a look at that sum of my life. I'm sitting in a detox center wearing pajamas. And my sum of my life was at zero. Just lost a job, got a severance pay. And most of all, I would continue getting high. But I couldn't do anything about it until I had to turn to somebody who was close to me. Because they came in about 3 years before I came in. And I watched them staying clean one day at a time. But I didn't interfere with them, because getting high was my presence, because that's what I had to continue doing. So, like I said, in August the 9th, surrendering, sitting in a detox center with pajamas and my life at the sum of zero. I ain't know which point or which direction to go into, you know, until Now I know there was a God of my understanding intervening to let me know this is the last one, because he worked through a social worker. He asked me what was I going to do if I left detox. I told him I was going to finish getting high and killing myself, because that's the only thing I knew how to do. Tell myself I'm going to be all right. But then he saw a fit that I needed treatment, so I went to a 28-day treatment program. Was that the last one? Until I found out that anger problem that I was holding, resentments and anger, not only towards brothers and sisters and friends in the neighborhood and co-workers and people I was coming in contact with, now they know that I was making me feel bad at somebody else's expense. Because one more time, I didn't really like the way I was perceiving me as this person, as this image I was trying to live up to. But deep down inside, the drug beat me so down that I was so weak that I couldn't even stand up anymore, you know. So as prior in that 28-day treatment program, finding out that anger problem, and I was ready to snap at anybody. As soon as you just say something, I was ready to go off. But then I found out that by doing that, I had probably one more thinking that I had one more run. Because I was always using drugs to calm me down. But it also gave me a whole bunch of energy that I had to burn off, that I had to do something. But I did not know what to do with me. So the drugs did what it's supposed to do, beat me down in submission. Till I got sick and tired in that miserable feeling, and I didn't know which way was out or which way was up, until I started coming to Narcotics Anonymous. Is this the last one? Well, when I first started coming to meetings, I got this sponsor. I was in his hip pocket for about 9 months. All of a sudden, after a week after he celebrated his anniversary, he relapsed. And I was working toward approaching him my first year. And thank God for the people that foundation that I was building in here. Is this the last one? Because when he told me, honestly, truth that he had relapsed, you know, that hurt feeling came over me one more time. Wow, God. Every time I let somebody get close to me or into me, get to know me, somehow they seem a way to be removed. It's usually through my behavior, or usually they go on and do something else. Because I felt so insecure, like I needed to hold on to something. I couldn't recover by myself. And also within that first year, I had to take a look at, did I have any reservations? First of all, I'm looking at the fact that I had a daughter's mother in recovery, and she left me, and I'm trying to figure out what and what I'm going to do. How can I live off her recovery? So the first thing y'all told me was, I had to get with the men in here. So that's why I got a sponsor, meeting other guys. And started talking about how I was feeling, thinking I was getting the short end of a stick, when I had to learn how to become a responsible parent, when I didn't even want to. Because I was used to half-hearted meeting my responsibilities. Is that the last one? No, because within 3 or 4 years, I found out that I had to start paying child support. See, anything to escape from facing reality that I had to deal with this lady in recovery, and I didn't really want her in a part of my life. But I had people that I know that I grew up with who was already in the rooms told me that she was going to be a part of your life for the rest of your life. And I said, oh, man. So that made me realize, woke me up a little bit, told me that I had to start doing some work on Joe. Because his attitude and his behavior would send him right back out the door real quick if I wasn't careful, you know. So I had to get involved with service. I saw an attraction. Is this the last one? Because y'all told me what lengths was I willing to go to start on this road to recovery. So I got in service. I've been in service for over the last 17 years. It really helped me to realize, to get to know Joe through that attitude and that behavior, his mouth and a few checks there, and he would like to run right up, but couldn't cash. Because he know one more time, his mouth got him in trouble. And my behavior would show, because that little boy would show up one more time and want to run and go hide behind somebody else to protect him. Was that the last one? Then I had to take a look at the fact that if I kept on going like the way I was going, I was really looking for a reason to go back out the door. But thank God for the people that the God of my understanding placed in my life. See, when I came around here in 90, they wouldn't let me go anywhere. They wouldn't let me die. You know, regardless, they saw the look on the, and the pain on my face. If I came into a meeting, somebody would pull me up and ask me what was wrong. I had to tell them the truth. Truth of the fact is that life on life terms, I didn't really want to be responsible. Only thing I was thinking about was, dang, if my buddies, who's in all them still out there, half ducking their responsibility, I come here, I can't use anything to change my mood, thinking that I'm a be all right, that I can get me together one more time. But sticking around here for a while, this is just the last one, until about, into my seventh year. I had gotten another sponsor, and I had to realize that I had to take that service work mask off. I had to let people get to know me. Plus, I had to start to get to know me, the recovering act. The guy you might see who seems quiet, who goes about doing what he's doing, not caught up in everything around him. Because I was too busy focusing on my recovery, which could be a dangerous thing because I started getting serious. And when I started taking things too serious, I think I'm trying to perfect something that I know I had no control over. See, I might want to take some credit, the last one more time. Yeah, I got clean. I'm thinking I can celebrate because I've been over a few years I'm doing this. But I had to watch them traps and them slippery places and people and things that the disease would tell me. By doing step work with my sponsor, that the disease like to dress up, that I like to show me that's real good. But I know it was detrimental to me because I like to self-destruct. The last one, when I start self-destructing, first thing I want to do, I want to run and go get me one more time. But I had to learn how to sit still, practicing some tolerance and patience, and making that third step come alive for me. I mean, I had to learn how to let go and let God in. So there was no more excuses for me to go use, you know. I didn't go use when one night I got locked up for child support. Was that the last one listening to all them youngins over at the jail talking about who this and that? And I'm like, oh, man, I got to get in. Told myself one more time, I can tough it out. Thank God that God was working in my life. He knew what was best for me. See, when he bring you this far, and you haven't used. So what makes you think I want to take my will back and do it my way one more time? See, I'm too busy trying to prove that image up one more time. Y'all told me it got old in here fast. See, I had to let the old me die so the new one could come through. Because if I wasn't careful, that old one could tell me that lifestyle, you can go back out there and do what you want to do and be all right. But through my confusion and through my thinking and doing the step work with a sponsor and helping people in my network, let me know to realize the fact that all the positive right and wrong things, that the right thing to do was continue to learn how to be there for a newcomer who was coming in the door behind me. I'm like, wow. Here I am opening a place for meetings, and it's just me and a bunch of newcomers in the meeting. Latest meeting at night, because I was one of those addicts. I didn't have that discipline to be in the house at 9 o'clock at night. See, I had to be in the house 12 midnight and after because that was my way. But thank God for this meeting that I used to open and close for from 10:30 to 12 midnight. It was just right for me until I found out that even leaving that meeting that I was watching people in their lifestyle come past me and that lets me know that I can be one of them one more time. Was this the last one? Especially when I run into a suffering addict And I know that look and that, and aroma and that feeling. And I'm thinking, I'm in Narcotics Anonymous. Man, they can still get high, and I can't. Because I got to keep my story up front. And when I get high, everything happens. A whole bunch of trouble that I can easily get into. See, I don't, trouble don't find me. I find it real quick. And then I got that stupid look on my face one more time. Talking about how I got here. And then want to go into denial. Because I didn't really want to let nobody know that I made mistakes. Till coming here, y'all told me it's all right to make a few mistakes. And they don't last that long in here. Then I got to take a look at, do I really want to continue doing what I'm doing, especially now since I got a little bit of change in my pocket, I got a better job, I accumulated a few things, and also I can tell myself I owe myself a little bit of fun. Get away from people in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, go back out in that lifestyle with people moving fast, money fast, cars and all that. And one more time, I'm detrimental to self-destruction. You know, is that the last one? Because each time I look, I keep thinking somebody either trying to influence me by flashing a cup or holding a stem or puffing on one of them blunts. And yeah, like they really doing something. See, I remember the pain and all that work it took on that self-destructive pattern. Is that the last one? To continue trying to find something to make me feel good and tell me I'm a better person than I was really worth. Because I didn't really want to face me, you know. Is that the last one? No. I got to be careful. Because now, coming up on 18 years and thinking that I can have recovery made because I did some step work, knew a few people, and help people along the way, that all of a sudden I can forget that I don't need to go to too many meetings no more. I don't need to continue working on my recovery. And then tell him, life, I got life made. All of a sudden that said to the disease telling me, yeah, you deserve one more time to reward yourself without even knowing. I grieved through a death, loss of a father in here. I even went through God helped me get through the anger period with finding out the daughter I had was pregnant and was in labor. I had to leave a meeting and go be supportive of her. Steam coming out my head and everything else. I'm like, wonder how one more time. How I got the short end of the stick. And the reality of all that was that I wanted to blame her mother. Why did you let this happen? Get off your track. But I had to take a look apart. I was doing the best that I can. Spending some time with her. A few over the years, but then all of a sudden, you know how when they get to smelling themselves when they're a teenager, all of a sudden, she don't need to be daddy's little girl anymore. She can do things on her own. I'm like, one more time. I saw me and her and that behavior I didn't even really like. So it kind of made me feel a little bit ashamed and guilt, like, damn, that's my child. And what am I, how am I feeling? Thank God I had a foundation that that's the last one. Because I knew that y'all told me the only thing I had to do was go to a meeting, pray, pick up and try to help somebody. Most of all, I was helping the dummy. Because I needed to practice that tolerance and patience with self one more time. Then I had somebody always suggested he would read this step or that step to find out, get in touch with what you're going through, especially when them defects of character and insecure fear and the anger, resentment, you know, because fear sets in a lot of times with me, even with success, if I'm not careful. Because once that blessing comes, I'm thinking that, hey, is that the last one? If I get this, I get too excited and I want to celebrate. See, I got to be careful. Because anything can change my mood real quick. Then I'm off to the race. But since being grounded in here, y'all told me I had to learn how to become humble in the midst of being humiliated. through my actions. So I humbly stay grounded. I remind myself where I came from, what got me started when I ain't had nowhere else to go. First coming around in here, was that the last one with no job and did not know when I was going to work again? When I became employable, that's by taking a few simple suggestions and the attraction of the people that I had that was around me, was willing to help me and work along to help. So that took away my excuses for me self-destructing and me wanting to get high one more time. I just take it one day at a time. So it's not all about what I think I can do, what I want to do, because the disease can play tricks in my mind real quick today, thinking that it's all right and it ain't, and it's not going to be that bad. But I've been without it for so long, and I'm greedy, so I know I will kill me. Is that the last one? If I'm looking for an excuse to run for me one more time. So I had to learn how to grow up in here. You know, and thank God for people, because he placed people in my life for a reason, to remind me that recovery is ongoing. It's not just get a few years and ride off into the sunset. It's about staying in the reality of life, because I can hit a bottom right now. And that one, I know how I would get it. All I got to do is take a look at my attitude, my behavior, and listen to people, especially on my job, talking about how they doing this and doing that, and watching the effects when they come to work. I'm fresh and watching them drag. How can you have that much fun? Because I remember when. Is that the last one? Because I was killing myself. I was just like them. Until I prior coming into Narcotics Anonymous. God told me freedom from active addiction. I reaped the benefit. Most benefit I got is having a peace of mind and peace with self. I can remember, I can throw that away if I think it. If I want to try one more run and not thinking that I can get back in here and telling myself, yeah, I did it and I made it, but do I really want to be at honest with myself? If I'm thinking I can do that one more time. Because I remember the pain and the misery I felt. So I don't want to use today. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.